So at 4 p.m., we will have call to order by system-wide staff. 4:05 p.m., review and approval of agenda prior meeting minutes by our chair, Tino Calabia. At 4:10 p.m., we'll have a safety update from our emergency preparedness training department that will be facilitated by Nakia Bradley, our Senior Director of Emergency Preparedness. At 4:45 p.m., we will have Dr. Tom Pei from WayMap. He is the CEO and founder. At 5:15 p.m., we will have a committee discussion. At 5:45 p.m., we'll have public comment period. And then at 6 p.m., adjournment. We will now proceed with the roll call. When your name is called, please confirm your presence. Susan Bullmaster.
I am here.
Thank you. Darnice Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
Rico here.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Up here.
Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Hi, I'm here.
Thank you.
Sure.
Swatna Kumar.
I'm here.
Thank you. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newzel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Sarah Rod.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. Paul Summerfort. Patrick Sheehan. Philip Weinthrop. At this time, I will turn the meeting over to Chair Calabia to proceed with the agenda. Chair Calabia, you have the floor.
Yes. Let's see. You have the agenda up, Kent, or do you? The agenda isn't up yet?
Oh, I did have it up earlier. I can put it back up if you like.
Well, just for the second so we can pass
Sure.
on.
All right, is it visible?
Yes, every member should be able to see it or know about the items on it from past emails. all approve, all members voting in approval of the agenda or the motion to approve the agenda.
Aye.
Aye.
Second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 The agenda is passed. let's move on to the meeting minutes. And Maggie, I couldn't find the January meeting minutes. Have they been completed yet?
Yeah, so they were shared on January 26th.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
No, I can resend them.
Okay. let's see. As I recall, they dealt with Sarah Meyer came and she gave us an update on the restrooms. And Sandy helped lead a discussion on signage. And apparently, we're going to deal with another aspect of signage today. all in favor of approval of the last meeting minutes?
Hi, this is Sarah. I will make a motion to accept the minutes as written unless anyone discovers something that needs to be changed after we reread them.
Good.
Excellent.
So with that proviso, we're accepting the agenda given the proviso. Okay. Second.
Yes, David.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 The agenda is accepted with the proviso that was mentioned just a few seconds ago. Now let's move on to today's meeting, which deals with safety update. The emergency preparedness training is Nikki Bradley there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, it's all yours, Nikki.
Nikki, you are on mute. There you go. That's better. Hi. I am Nakia Bradley. I'm a woman with short hair wearing a striped turtleneck sitting in my office for this presentation. Very glad to have an opportunity to speak with you all about how emergency preparedness and evacuation planning is implemented with our bus and rail operations. So I will go straight into my presentation. So when we think about how do we organize our emergency preparedness, we are governed by two documents. One is our emergency operations plan that provides a framework for service disruptions and emergencies on bus and rail. We also have an agency safety plan that integrates emergency response procedures and emphasizes communication across all of our operations. There's a lot of questions that were given to me about what do we do with training? How often does it happen? All of our operators are trained when they are initially hired. Well, let me rephrase. All of our employees, when they start with Metro, are trained broadband with emergency preparedness. How do we prepare as individuals, as myself, if I'm in an emergency while on duty? And then also, how do we operate in an emergency to assure our customers and passengers are safe? And that training regards evacuation of a bus or rail. Also, if we are evacuating a station, what do we do to assist folks in being able to properly egress the station? The frequency of refresher training, we do refresher training for bus and rail operators every 3 years. That does not mean they don't get any training in the interim. We do smaller, shorter trainings. We've trained on things like de-escalation. We've also trained on individual preparedness. We also do drills and tabletops. The drills and tabletops change each year. Last year, we did an active shooter. We on a bus for an active shooter. We also did an active shooter in an administrative building to prepare folks depending on what the situation may be. We also have been doing some tabletops and drills on battery electric bus. It's a little bit different in how it operates, so we're preparing our staff to support in case any emergencies happen on a battery electric bus. As we move into the new year, we have some trainings on severe weather. We got to practice a little ahead of time in the snow we had over the last week or so, but another way for us to train in case we need to evacuate if there's a disabled train in severe weather. Other questions I received was, how do we train our operators to assist customers, be it offloading or moving to another train? So I'll start with bus first. I just want to give you some capabilities of our buses in an emergency situation first. So our buses have standard emergency exits that have a rear door, emergency windows, and a roof hatch. We also for ADA accessibility also have low floor ramps or wheelchair lifts, and each bus includes two wheelchair securement areas and a priority seating. for evacuation notes when it comes for function and access needs. In an emergency, passengers may evacuate if possible through the marked emergency exits. However, our staff is trained to assist. If you use a wheelchair, if it's allowable, we will lower the bus to be able to evacuate. If not, we do our best to evacuate in an assisted manner. And then, if we can remove the wheelchair or find a suitable temporary replacement, we will. They are trained to do that. So that's what our bus operators. What our rail operates a bit different, being in a rail station, but the features that are in a train car are emergency door releases and intercoms, and then there are call boxes on the platform and on the train if emergency help is needed. Now, with an evacuation on a train, they start first by making announcements to the passengers. Then you wait for official instruction, and then from there they do the emergency door release tools. Now, be mindful that if you use a wheelchair, there is an extra release button so that both bulkhead doors can open versus just one, when so it's wider so that people can get through the door if you use a wheelchair. So that's a nuance just for the rail operation to open both doors versus one to provide a wider berth. As for, are there any specific training that customers are that we recommend for like sensory or mobility limitations? So I have a few practical tips that I always share. Always familiarize yourself with where the bus wheelchair positions are, where the ramps are, where the lift operations are before an emergency. If you're on the rail, review the platform where the emergency intercoms are, where you see the accessible routes, where are the exits. And then also consider like what would your plan be if you needed to evacuate? Is it going back outside of the station? Would you need assistance? Who would be maybe able to help you in an emergency? Would you need the station manager or another passenger? So to think through those. One of the things I always do when I ride the system is the same. Always look, for those emergency exits. Always look to see how close I am to intercom if I needed help to press that button, because you can also call for help as well. If you're unable to see another person that may be able to help, you can always get to the, if you can get to the call box, call for help. A couple more things, and then I'll open us up for questions. There was a question also about like in real-time situations, if there needs to be an evacuation, I'm not, able to evacuate. We do have other opportunities. If, let's say, for example, you're evacuating onto our railroad tracks or on the roadway, we do have something called an evacuation cart. And that cart can be brought to the train. First responders or WMATA employees can assist you with getting onto the cart. And the cart has wheels, and we are able to move you to the platform using the ETEC cart. So there are some other opportunities if there's limited mobility or if you use a wheelchair and we're unable to take your equipment with you at that time. The last bit of guidance that we also give in real-time situations or not sure what to do situations, especially for our operator, they can always call our central control, our Metro Integrated Communication Center. There they can talk to what our other employees that would be able to give them some guidance, as well as a fire liaison who can talk directly with first responders as well to alert, extra assistance is needed or special assistance if it requires. Let's say, for instance, maybe you needed oxygen or something else to alert them when they arrive, what may be needed to assist passengers. So really excited about what new opportunities we have to improve this. So while these are great and it's a good starting point, there's always room for improvement. So we've been working very closely with our accessibility team to strengthen our emergency preparedness. We are looking to do some more expansion into this area, very specifically creating some videos of how to evacuate. I'd mentioned the different features, right? The hatch door or the windows, but what does that really look like? I know for me, I have trouble looking. I'm a visual learner. Also, are there things for visually impaired, or there is Braille anywhere, we can show that as well in a to different participants. I know there was also asked to do a live experience. So video may not be the best way to show everybody these particular features. So we are also working to schedule a live experience where we can come out and take you out on buses and rail out to a station and even to our training facility. So you can see what type of training materials we use, but also feel and touch and see what we are training our different staff members with. So I'll, pause there to see if there's any questions that you may have.
Nakia, we may take you up on the invitation that you just extended. Now, what you described are ways of informing staff when the emergency happens in the tunnel, for instance, which is maybe the worst scenario. When it happens in the tunnel, the only person there who is experienced or has training in this may be the operator of the train and possibly the ambassadors who might be on the train. With regard to the cart, would the cart be managed by the operator or, say, ambassadors? If they're in the tunnel itself, and how, where do they pull the cart or push the cart? On the track or on the beside the train? Where did they go?
The cart is pushed on the track. They're located at each of our rail stations. They're positioned on the wall. The station manager, metro employees, and our first responders are all trained to use those carts and how to properly load them onto the track and then move it to the immobile train and then proceed to evacuate the passengers that need that assistance.
Thanks. The last point I'd like to make is that you're talking to an audience who are familiar with some of these things, but what about tourists and what about people who are not as related to WMATA as we are? Is there any possibility that a brief card could be printed up and put into the little baskets at the operator's kiosk?
That is a great question. So what we did for Emergency Preparedness Month last September is launched our emergency preparedness website, which is external facing. We also did update our handouts. We can the great suggestion for us to put it in kiosks. I will work with my team to accomplish that, but there is a printable version available on the emergency preparedness link. I'll drop it in the chat. If folks have access to that, but thank you for the suggestion. That is a great one to print those out and take and have them in the kiosk for folks to give out. The a wonderful suggestion. So yes, there is something for tourists, so they could go on to our emergency preparedness and learn about evacuating. We also will be updating the videos I mentioned to go on to that web page by September of this year as well.
Maggie, can you call upon whoever's hand is up next?
Yes, so we have Phil Posner, who's next.
Yes, good afternoon. And I am a 6 foot white male sitting under a palm tree in Florida. And my question is updating the on rail and on bus procedures for passengers. Previously, the two major information cards were in the rail car by the middle doors, and they have been redone so that the print is very small. And they've also eliminated a number of things that were on there, and it's very confusing for people on mobility devices. They stay with the device and then wait for somebody to come get them. while everybody else is walking over them and using them as handrails to get out of the car in the emergency. The other problem with communication is the instructions for the passengers by each intercom can be very confusing. On occasion, it says, push the button and speak. But then the question is, do you hold the button down or do you release the button when you speak? And that gets very confusing because on the old cars, you were supposed to hold the button down while you spoke, but on the new cars, you aren't. And so making certain that both of those information items are updated and easy to understand. The other situation you will run into is for low vision, low hearing individuals, and international languages. Are the emergency people equipped with 3x5 cards or flash cards or flip pads so communication can be done in multiple languages? And in ways for low vision and low hearing people to talk to the emergency personnel and to also understand what the emergency personnel are saying. So I've gone way over my 2 minutes, but the major problem is communication, communication, communication. And thank you for coming. You'll hear a lot from the other folks that are on the committee because they've all participated. Thank you.
Thank you for your feedback, Phil. I will most definitely take notation of that. These are great. These are the kind of comments we need to hear to make our system better. I know that we have been looking at iPads, being able to equip our operators with iPads so that we can use like a language line or different ways of communicating. So that could also be something that could assist in the communication discussion you just gave us. But truly appreciate the feedback and hope to come back another time to report out some of the changes we made based on that feedback. But thank you.
Maggie, next.
You're welcome.
Sarah Rett.
Hi, this is Sarah Rod again, middle-aged female, and I'm wearing a blue shirt today. So a couple of my questions or comments were already sort of covered, but I'll try to go through it really quickly. So great idea on the videos. I was going to make that suggestion, but you're already ahead of me. I guess the question there, though, is I assume these are all customer-facing videos. It might also be worthwhile creating some training videos for the staff for specific situations with persons with disabilities so that they can have some exposure to how that might work in an emergency. Also, what was just said about the signage is true. I know our signage working committee had talked about the emergency information signs and how densely packed they are with small type and how hard that would be to read. Maybe some better ideas of how to do that. And we're happy to talk about ways, like possible improvements for that situation. Another concern, which was just raised, was about people who are deaf. How are they going to hear those audible announcements that are usually sort of the first sign of, oh, there's an emergency, something needs to happen. Separately, we had talked about getting non-static signs onto the train so that messages could be seen as well as heard, not just for emergency situations, but for general things like outages or changes or something to do with the service routes. And I think that was most of the things I wanted to talk about. Thanks. Oh, and we would love to come out and do the training.
So to briefly respond, because I don't want to take up too much time. So thank you also for your feedback. So with the videos, yes, we will be doing some internal facing videos as well. One of the things that Maggie and I both have talked about were sensitivity training. Like when to don't just push someone who uses a wheelchair, you need to ask first, right? Things of that nature where we need to do sensitivity training. But also, as you mentioned, what are some good ways to assist with evacuation or just general announcements or assistive tactics. So yes, that is definitely on our radar with videos for them as well. So we can move on to the next one. I think it's Stephen or Steve. Sorry, my apologies.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Steve Kaffin, and I have black hair and I'm Caucasian and I'm wearing a blue shirt today with three buttons. There we are. first, Nikki, are you writing some of these things down? Because there are some really good comments that have been made already. Okay. I have a couple of quick comments and then two quick questions. First relates to buses. There is more, I notice, of a danger to passengers on buses after hours, and especially when it gets a little dark and and groups start to roam. May I suggest a policy that after a certain hour, the middle doors don't open as a boarding possibility. I noticed that, some operators now open the middle doors automatically, and others, and at some point we're going to have middle door boarding, but we need to be sensitive to perhaps a time limit. And let's say after 7 o'clock or after it gets dark or what have you, we need the gatekeeper to ensure the safety of passengers on board. The other comment I had relates to understanding of information, including emergency information. The operators speak too quickly. And in the stations, we know there's an echo. And on trains, we know oftentimes words are slurred together, or the operators are speaking normally, but it's difficult to get everything that the operator is saying normally. As you mentioned, every 3 years, there's training, and my suggestion is you might consider having some practice or instituting something which reminds the operators that a regular cadence may not be effective in the stations or on the rail cars, and so that everybody can hear the emergency information.
Steve.
I don't want to take up time. Two questions. What are the procedures for safety and security on trains during the light hour period? That is, when there may be few passengers on board, let's say after 7 o'clock at night. Thank you.
So I don't think that there is a difference in how we look at safety and security. Well, there is a difference how we look at safety and security at night. For example, with buses, you can ask for a particular stop that is not on the route. Like if the corner or in front of your house and the bus goes right by it, you can ask for them to stop. So we do have some things from a security perspective. I thank you for your feedback about that middle door being locked or not used at night. I can pass that feedback on. I think that was a great suggestion. I know Sarah brought it up and I forgot to mention it, but I think this is relevant to yours as well, Steve, that as we get the newer rail cars, so the 8K is coming and we having this the 7K, you can see visually on the screen when the next stop is or how many stops to the one you want to get to. And we can provide emergency communications on that on the 7K car. So as we get newer train cars that have better technology equipment in them, we'll be able to offer some additional assistance for someone who may be deaf or hard of hearing and cannot hear the audible emergency information. Maybe they can visually see it. So those are some things that we definitely have been looking at. Is also a strobe light as well, similar to what you have with fire protections when the fire alarm goes off that has a visual strobe. So those things are being discussed. So thank you for your feedback.
No, thank you. Thanks.
We have Pat Sheehan next.
Thank you. Great presentation. I appreciate it. On the communication side, the videos that you're making, of course, they'll need to be closed captioned and audio described, particularly the ones that are going to be facing the public. But I would suspect that even the internal video should have that. Most of the players now have the ability to turn off captioning or audio description if you're not going to use it. And it might be, Maggie, I don't know if this is appropriate, but it might be good for us to take a look at some of the content before it gets put on video just to make sure it's okay. Another set of eyes and
Absolutely.
ears. Okay, that'd be great. And Maggie, I've got some contacts in audio in the audio description world that I can share with you since the video should be ready by September.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Appreciate you sharing with us.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, next we have Sandy Nizel.
Hi, this is Sandy, senior, gray hair, sort of an Icelandic sweater sitting in my TV room office at home. Great presentation, really good questions for everybody. I think this may fall into the sensitivity category, if as well as logistics. So if a train is stuck in a tunnel and emergency people are coming towards the train and passengers need to get off the train, is there two-way traffic for them? And following on to that, if a cart has to be brought from a station through the rail tunnel to the train, can the operators and whoever on the train assure the person or people who need to be transported by a cart through the tunnel that they don't have to wait until the very end to get off of the train, that as soon as the cart gets there, they can be deboarded? Is that a true statement that there can be two-way traffic in the tunnel?
So there cannot, then that's for safety reasons of the third rail. But in addition to that, I do want to explain there are some good techniques that an ETEC cart is not our first way to be able to evacuate anyone from the roadway. We can do what's called a rescue train and back another train up to the current train, and they just move into the other car as if they were going to switch cars. So that is one opportunity of way of moving people into a new train car. Another way that we can also do it as well is if we are able to move the train as a whole. We try to get it operable again and move the train to the platform so everyone has an equal opportunity to get off at the same time. So there isn't a priority or self-evacuation that happens on a rail car when it's disabled. When immobile is the correct term, when the train is immobile, the train operators walks through every single car just to get one. We want a head count and to know who is all on the train, but there isn't a, oh, we stopped the train, you can get off, you have to wait. No, the idea is everyone gets off together. And so thank you for bringing that question up, because that does come up often. And same thing, when we're evacuating, the first responders would come with the cart. So it wouldn't be we walked up to the train and we didn't know we needed it. We know when we get there that it was needed and it comes with them. So everyone's evacuating together. So it's not a wait till last. To be honest, they probably would be first to assure that they could, the rest of the folks evacuating could walk behind the cart as it rolls down the track. So, otherwise, there's honestly no room to go around the cart, to go down the track. It's on the physical track. So they would have to go first. So, but great question. I think this is something we can visually show you when you come out to the training center.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
Yeah.
you.
All right. And our last hand is Mrs. Debbie Fisher.
Thank you. And I am not on the screen, so no point to describe myself. My question is, or it's really a reminder that folks with developmental disabilities or anxiety or different psychiatric conditions may very well panic under emergency circumstances. And it's a population that really needs, it's both a sensitivity but a strategy as well to assist them, because they can be experienced as disruptive when in fact they don't understand, they're very frightened, and they're going to need patience and explanation and attention to assist them with leaving the train.
So we do have crisis interventionalists that we are deployed in our system all the time. We do get training on that to try to recognize if we need to ask, like, hey, are you experiencing, so and so issue? How can I be assistive to you? So agreed. I think our sensitivity training can amplify that, but we do have some training on particularly trying to identify or see if someone may be experiencing a crisis moment or feeling uncomfortable about the situation to evacuate. So, and honestly, even with shock, even anybody can experience that, right? Depending on the situation. If they see smoke, I have done a training on active shooter, and I can tell you gunfire makes me debilitated. I cannot move, I freeze, and that gunfire scares me. So anyone can experience that. It's just being able to recognize someone might need some additional help. But thank you for flagging that. I think it's still something we can also still make sure that we cover more in depth in our sensitivity training.
Thank you, because my concern is that they may require, you're bringing out, you're attending to wheelchair users and so forth, and these are people who may actually need someone deployed individually to assist them. And as you said, it's hard to recognize necessarily in advance who's the person sitting there frozen, but I do think there needs to be somebody on site in those circumstances. So in the same way you bring a cart, you would actually bring someone who's equipped to handle those situations.
Thank you. We will definitely add that to our feedback, to our working group.
Thank you.
We do have one more question from Dr. Posner.
Yes, this is quick. In case of emergencies like cardiac arrhythmias, fibrillation, etc., the question is, are there electric defibrillators available and close enough to be used and people trained to use them? And even more important, the knowledge that the batteries have to be tested because they do go dead after 6 months of non-use, which did happen in DuPont Circle several years ago. You also mentioned of flashing lights during an emergency and understand the possibility of triggering seizures in certain individuals
So,
with epilepsy or other CNS problems. So again, I would be very careful about flashing lights, and I would be very careful about making certain the batteries are good in the defibrillators. Thank you.
we do have AEDs in all of our stations. They are all checked 100% monthly. So those batteries are checked every 30 days. So there isn't years or extended period of times where they're not checked. My actual team is the team that checks the AEDs. We also have electronic monitoring of AEDs now, so it will let us know if there's a something wrong with the AED and it's not functioning properly. We have a remote sensor that sends us an alarm, so we know someone to go out to physically check the AEDs. Staff are trained. We do offer in-house CPR, AED, and trauma kits, which are also known as stop the bleed or until help arrives, to assist anyone that may be having a medical emergency until first responders that have more extensive training are available to assist them. And that is something we've pushed here at the authority since last year for everyone to be CPR and AED trained. We were very lucky last year. We had 8 saves using an AED. We are honoring folks at the end of this month along with DC Fire for people who save lives with the AEDs. So the program, I'm very proud of it and what our employees have done, because it takes a lot to step up and be willing to assist someone in an emergency. And we saw a good amount do that last year. I'm very proud of it. But thank you. I think that is
worth acknowledging. As far as the strobe lights, again, recognizing that as well, we do have to look at best practice. We have this committee as one of the ways to vet some of the ideas that we do have. However, we cannot ignore that if you're unable to hear audibly, that we have to find a way to communicate. So if a strobe light is not it, we'll look for other, newer technologies that may be utilized to make sure that we cover everyone who may be in need of knowing of an emergency.
Thank you.
Maggie?
Here at Calabria, we do not have any other hands at this time.
Okay, if not, thank you very much for your presentation. We look forward to any kind of new information you can provide us regarding training law personnel. Thank you very much, Nikea.
Thank you all for having me. Chair
Yeah.
Calabi, Sarah has raised her hand.
Oh,
all
just
right.
trying to
Sorry.
get this is just trying to get one last note in there. Maggie, maybe the whole question on the best systems for dealing with deaf and hard of hearing riders might be something to send to that group of people that I know you're trying to organize right now.
That would be excellent. We will do that. And we also do have some contact from Gallaudet, so we'll want to include them in that process as well.
Exactly.
Perfect. And Chair Calabria, there is another hand raised, I
Okay.
believe. It is phone
Yes.
number 2184.
Yes, this is Vanessa. And excuse me, my apologies. I came in late. I had a doctor's appointment, but I'm just listening. One of the other issues I was, and you may have already addressed it, if someone was to faint or pass out, is there like smelling salt or something to revive them? Because that person could be kind of dead weight trying to get them revived or whatever.
Yes, there is. We do have AED capability on our rail and bus system. And so yes, that is available. We do some initial, like, are you okay? And training that we get in CPR prior to using the AED. But yes, they are available.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you again, Nikia. Now we are exactly on time for next presentation with Tom.
Hello.
Yeah, Tom.
Oh, great. Thank you. You can hear me now, yeah?
Yes.
Well, Chairman, Maggie, it's great to meet you, and thanks for the invitation. So basically, I've been asked to give an update on what Waymap is doing in DC. Where are we now? What have we learned as a as part of the process, and what are we doing about it? And I guess what are the future plans? And maybe a larger rollout, perhaps to the general public, which we were planning for later last year, but then we got kind of sidetracked on it. So first of all, where are we now? We have about 20,000 downloads, and that was just done on a very small budget social media campaign. And I think about 2,000 regular users. We cannot tell you how many are disabled, unfortunately. But because we don't collect that sort of data, but we can say that about 12,000 of the downloads were for iOS and 8,000 were for Android, and about 50% of them accessed the disability settings. Okay, that doesn't mean that they have a disability. It just means that they access the disability settings, whether they were just exploring it and opened it, or whether they're regularly using it, we can't say. At the moment, we have about a 97% journey success rate, and the major failures are in around loss of tracking, Because stations have kind of changed and our visual positioning isn't catching up with it. So we're going to have to look at rescanning, and I'm working with NYU on a rescanning technique which is faster and cheaper than using LiDAR scanning. So that's kind of the first thing. Where are we now? What have we learned? The biggest thing we've learned is that for many disabled people, there's a couple of things that are necessary. So if I deal with blind and visually impaired people first, blind and visually impaired people, because they need to use the app in a much more regimented way than other users, they need a certain amount of training. And as a result, I have written a training manual, which we're going to make available to O&M instructors. And we've been speaking with the National Federation, the American Council for the National Federation for the Blind, American Council for the Blind, and the American Federation of the Blind. And each of those are prepared to, they have contributed to the preparation of the training program along with with O&M instructors. We were going to come back to WMATA to see how we could make that part of the travel training program. The other thing that we learned was that there was a lot of complaints about our user interface. It was too complicated. So there were too many steps that had to be taken in order to get the app to work for you. And we are now rolling out what we call version two of the app, which will be available for beta testing at the end of March, and then rolled out hopefully in June. And what this does is it absolutely simplifies how the app works. And it also has much better tricks in the app to make the journey much more seamless than it currently is. Once we've done that, then we did engage with people from WMATA, and I cannot remember the name of the department, but we have worked out a budget working with the folks from WMATA, plus our own communications people, plus Verizon, plus the charities in DC, to run a fairly large recruitment program in June that will be aimed not just at disabled people but also at visitors, because one of the with version two, it's much more friendly for people who are not disabled. It looks nicer, it feels nicer, it works a bit more like Google Maps, or does it's slightly different, but it's got that kind of feel to it that it would be good. I think the other thing that we have learned is that when we scanned the stations, we took a picture at a particular moment in time, and some of those stations have changed. It's not coming up at the moment as a problem in relation to anybody who's using the app at present, but it will cause problems in the future. So we are trying to develop a way of using the closed circuit television system within the station to live update maps. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons why you should do it. There's also a lot of reasons why you wouldn't do it, and we'd have to talk with the security people within the WMATA network to see if that's something that they will be prepared to do. We've also rolled out in Singapore, and we're finding pretty much in Singapore the same things as we're finding in Washington, with one exception. Trains in Singapore, they have a 99% success sorry, 99% service record, arriving and departing within 30 seconds of the time that has been advertised. So GTFS updates are not available. GTFS is the system that stations use in order to be able to communicate changes to timetables and changes to, if a train is delayed, or if there's a lift, sorry, an elevator that's out or an escalator that's out in a particular station. We're working with Verizon and their 5G network to see if we can speed up the rate at which these announcements from the train operators like WMATA would be made available to people on their phones. So I was particularly intrigued listening to the last speaker because there's a lot of stuff that WMATA needs to communicate, and some of that we could pick up in our GTFS feed. Next steps is rollout version 2, which is the new improved front end system. We've made some amendments to the algorithm. We've also put in a lot of AI so that the app learns much faster about who you are, and also gives data to the algorithm, which is self-learning now. So as you move about, you're helping to improve the entire algorithm for everybody. We're going to have a big launch and hopefully another party. So thank you, Chairman. I'll stop there and take questions.
One question. The mechanism is based on knowing the pace of the individual who is using it to find his or her way around. But for a long time, wheelchair users have not been served because it's difficult to figure out their pace. What's the step out one?
Sorry, I should have said with New York University. So there was two ways that we tried to deal with the wheelchair. One was getting a small little Bluetooth device and putting it on the wheel of the wheelchair. The problem with that is that the device costs about $20 and it gets knocked and breaks, and it just wasn't good. So the other thing, and we experimented with this in a way whilst we were doing the trials in Washington, but we're now developing it with NYU and with Harvard University. Whereby we're hoping to develop a system whereby you can put your mobile phone in a cup on the arm of your wheelchair, and we will then intermittently access the camera and give you accurate instructions through that, right? Or you could wear the camera around your neck if you wanted to, but and what we're dealing with is the security of the phone at the moment. It's a technology that we've proved in the laboratory, but Washington would be the first place we'll try it out because you guys are good at breaking things. So we learn a lot when we work with you guys.
Any anticipation of a date for the thing here? And
Can I come back to Maggie? I don't want to give a wrong date. I do have a meeting about it on this Friday,
okay.
and I get the update. The problem with technology is that everybody in this business tells you they'll have it tomorrow, and then what they give you tomorrow is just not what you wanted, and you have to go back and start again. So I just want to be really clear. I'm hoping to have it by September, but don't take that to the bank.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Tom. Maggie, hands up. Who's next?
We do have
Pat Sheehan with his hand up.
Thank you. Thank you. Tom, it's good to hear your voice again. This is great.
Yeah, top of the morning, top of
Good. Thank you
the
much.
top of the afternoon to you, right?
And unlike Phil, I'll describe myself since I rushed in from another meeting as a senior male, white hair, white shirt, winter coat on. So I'm not sitting under a palm tree. So anyway,
Sorry,
unfortunately.
and Pat, sorry to interrupt you. I forgot to describe myself. I'm a white maid, dark hair, and I'm wearing a check shirt.
Very good. A couple of things, Tom. Yes, a lot has changed. I guess one thing is I would love to get in touch with you to catch up a little bit more if you've got some time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah,
Good.
we can
There.
just exchange emails and calendars. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. There are members of my group within Silver Spring that did a lot of testing on this, and they've been beating me up for several months to
Yeah.
get more information on what's going on. So love to have you speak to that
Yeah, I
group.
mean,
And
Silver Springs was really difficult for us because it was built by two different organizations, and the maps were 10 meters out. So when we went in and we scanned and registered it, we were still 10 meters out, and it took us about 2 months to find that. So it
Right.
just
Oh, okay. Yeah. And yeah, organizations, I think you work both with the American Council of the Blind and National
Yeah,
Federation of the Blind. Yes.
absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. An excellent cross group of disabled people. Last question. I don't know. Well, maybe you can share with me when we talk who you're working with the American Council of the Blind. Because
Yeah, we'll do.
I'm,
Yeah.
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 Okay. Excellent, Tom. You'll get an email from me. Thanks.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Maggie, any other hands up?
Here, collaborate. We do not have any hands up at this moment.
This is Vanessa. I'm 2184. I did have my hand up.
Go ahead.
You don't see it.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, hello. I'm a middle-aged African American. My hair is I'm trying to think of the word layered, and I have on a blue sweatsuit. So my question is, in my comment, I participated in the trial, and one thing we ran into is what happens in the winter when you cannot, you have to wear it around your neck or put it in your purse or something. Has any of that improved, or is it the same kind of thing that you have to
Okay.
do for getting directions?
Yeah, we don't ask you to wear the phone around your neck. Basically, you can carry the phone in your hand or you can put it in your pocket. And that's still the case because what we really do is we're me measuring the energy in your hip alongside many other things that we're measuring in order to gain your step length, recalibrate your step length and the speed at which you're walking, right? But yes, we have improved the number of positions which you can hold the phone. So up to now you had to hold the phone almost like in front of you. But now you can make phone calls or answer texts. Yeah. We do
Okay, I
recommend
would
that
like
you
to
we do
participate. Oh,
recommend that you
okay.
stop if you're doing that. But if you
Right.
don't, we won't lose.
Okay.
But you might walk into a wall. That's the only thing, yeah, because you've missed instructions.
Right. And when you guys start out, yeah, I would like to pilot again if you need some volunteers because it
Oh,
was
love it.
very
Yeah, sorry,
interesting
I
and
should have
very
said
helpful.
fantastic. I should have said that because we would be beta testing hopefully in April. Volunteers, we'll come back to you, Maggie, if that's okay, to see if people want to volunteer.
Yes,
Sure.
please. Maggie, I see a hand up.
We do have Sandy.
Hi, this is Sandy again. Tom, I downloaded the app and tried it without much success about a year ago. So, would you suggest that at this point I download the app and try it again, or would it be better to wait until your beta testing in April or your rollout in June?
I would suggest you wait until we beta test. But if you do download it again and you want to try it, if you send me an email with the date and time that you tried it, then I can pull the logs out that of your tr and I can find out exactly what's not working for you.
I think it wasn't working because I really didn't understand how to make it work, and I tried to turn it on before I entered a station, and then anyway, so will your training manual come out at the same time as the beta
Yes, it
testing?
will. And version two is much better for you because it's much simpler. So I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's much more user friendly, if you know what I mean. And a lot more foolproof, because one of the things that we found was that you almost had to be an engineer to onboard yourself onto the app. We made it so precise. Now we are able to correct the inaccuracies much faster in your first 10 steps.
Oh, wow.
So, Tom, you also mentioned that it will be able to track your pace. Now, when I'm walking, when I first get started, I might, my first few steps might be slow. And once I kind of have the sense of where I'm going, I might walk faster and then I might slow
Sure.
down
Yeah.
again as I'm a little
Yeah.
unsure. Will,
Yeah.
does it incorporate all of
Oh,
that?
yes, it does. So basically, as I said, we measure energy, but we use a number of things to measure the energy. But one of them is the accelerometer. And we combine that with a system called map matching. So in other words, you take off, and let's say you're walking, at a medium pace, and then you run into a crowd of people, so you have to kind of slow down and shuffle as you go through maybe the fare gate or something, and then you speed up again, and then you get on the escalator. When you're going through the fare gates, we zero out the any errors in computation that we had, and then we are able to track your speed between there and the escalator, so we know now what your step length is again, and so on. So we are checking your step length every, I might be wrong, but every 7.25 seconds, I think it is.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, we've got a lot more sophisticated. The mathematicians cost an awful lot more money, but they're doing a good job.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
A smaller area where you were beginning the testing was it University of Villanova in Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, we did the LMU, Loyola Marymount, in Los Angeles, but we're now doing about half of the LA Metro network in time for the World Cup,
Oh, wow. Yes.
and if that works out well, then we would be doing it for the Olympics.
Terrific. Great. Maggie, any other hands up?
Not at this time. I do not see any hand icons up.
If there are any questions, Chair or Maggie, please send them forward, and I'll definitely get back to you. But thank you so much for the opportunity, and I'll say good night to you because it's cookie and milk time here in London.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you. Take
Okay.
care.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Maggie, though it wasn't on the formal agenda, there's interest in the Navi lens visit that some of the members had, Sarah and Sandy and a few others. Can we take that on now?
Yes. So it's my understanding that Sandy did ask to have a report out.
Yes.
So, Sandy, are you able to share a report out to the committee, the subcommittee? Or Sarah?
Yeah, I think Sandy was going to do, this is Sarah. Sandy was going to do an overview of the meeting that we had. And then just one of the questions we had that came up at the end was about Navalens. And we were just sort of interested in following up on that. But I think Sandy should probably give the overview first.
Okay, if technology, I finally got unmuted. I had too many things on my screen. So this is Sandy, and I want to give a report out, and I'll just call it a focus group meeting that several of us had with WMATA staff. And I'm trying to bring up my notes so that I can sort of say. So there were six of us who were AAC members and members of the public. Five of us are low vision or blind. And well, the WMATA staff, we had several people who have spoken to us before. I don't not have all the last names correct, but Jamie, who talked to us about the way station ahead signs, Dan, who's into graphics and designing signs, Sam, who's the product manager for getting signage up in the stations, and Brian, who's a tech guy, and Maggie Butler sort of facilitated the meeting. So the WMATA staff, Dan was the spokesperson, and they said they wanted to hit on three areas for us. Sort of the met, and these are my words, even though they gave us a handout. I'm sort of doing this in my words. They talked about Metro's signage goals and the priority, pers their priority perspective. And the focus was on static signage in Metro rail stations. That was the topic of the meeting, although we did diverge into digital signs occasionally and Navi-lens a little bit. They were trying to gather information from us, the low vision riders, sort of how do the low vision riders plan their route and what signs do they use along the way? So, we gave them all the information individually, and they were very receptive. Some of this duplicated, but every one of us had slightly different techniques at some part in the process. But I think generally it's safe to say we low vision people plan our route ahead of time at home, and then we need confirmation as we're going through the rail stations. And so confirmation at decision points, and we also need it would be better if we could have this confirmation of information at consistent locations. Then we had a chance. The third thing we got to do was observe at full scale several types of signage, overhead signs for with wayfinding information that none of us low vision people can use because we can't see stuff up there. Most of us didn't even know. Well, sometimes we didn't know there were overhead signs, but we'd have to get out apps or cameras or something to see that information. So generally speaking, we don't use the overhead signs, but the station ahead signs on the pylons and pillars are extremely helpful. And then they also showed us so they were giving us examples of the signs, station ahead signs that would be on pylons and pillars. And they also had a larger format system map. So the whole Metro Rail system map is a 6 by 6 foot by 6 foot, as opposed to I think now it's 4 foot by 4 foot or maybe 3 foot by 3 foot. I unfortunately did not take the time to look at that, so I'm going to have to ask my colleagues to help me out. So, Metro's perspective on signage, just to sum it up really briefly, is that less is better. Sort of less visual clutter having more specific information on more specific sign types at certain locations is their goal. And they're trying to make this consistent. They realize that over the years, tweaks have been made to signs and have been installed in a few stations, but not throughout the whole system. So they're trying to come up with a plan that's consistent in the formatting, in the layout, in the visual information, and in the location that can be tested out at L'Enfant Plaza, and then there can be feedback on that. And they're also trying to emphasize the need for, they recognize the need for ADA pathway signage. How do you find an elevator for egress, or when you're coming into the station, how do you find the elevator to get to the correct platform? So they're very conscious of this ADA pathway to help folks in wheelchairs, with vision disabilities, with, you know, luggage to get through the station, because quite honestly, I bet you all see people hauling suitcases up and down escalators, which is a little bit tricky and sometimes dangerous. And WMATA would really prefer people used elevators when they're hauling big things. So there were a lot of examples of plans for this metro rail signage. And I'm just going to go through another list briefly. When there's long station names, try to get the only the very longest station names will be in smaller lettering to fit on the signs. Whereas in all other cases, whenever possible, the station name will be in the larger lettering. As you're entering metro stations, to have pylons by the escalators and stairs going downstairs to help guide you which side to the platform are you going to need to go to. And similarly, when you're at the bottom of escalators and stairs, which way is this taking you upstairs? Because usually if there's a two levels of rails, you have to go at the upper level, you have to be at the correct side of the rails, because they're the way the rails go down the middle of those upper level platforms. I'm not reading this in exact order, and if I skip something, all you folks can help me later, and I'm sorry about this extra noise from my phone. When there's multiple exits from stations, Metro is going to invoke using lettering for them, A, B, C, D. You can already see that at some stations. And I've heard, although I don't think it was mentioned the other day, that A will always be the accessible exit. So that will be
18 minutes. Oh boy, okay, with the snow go away, right?
Okay, somebody should mute, and I'll just keep talking. So that you'll know when that uniformity comes into play, then you'll know that the A exit is where the elevators are. They are going towards the single letters for each rail on a circular disc so that the letters can be bigger. And, because somebody who's not familiar with the metro rail station, why would BL mean anything more succinctly than B for blue line? I mean, colors don't have an actual abbreviation, so why not just use the first letter of the color? They'll be adding airport symbols, an airplane symbol, and the letters of DCA or IAD. They'll be adding those at every station that will take you toward an airport, which is really useful because right now it's inconsistent. They often have it just at where you're transferring from one train to another, but to have it like all of the yellow line headed towards DCA or all of the blue line headed towards DCA makes more sense so that any tourist, any out of towner will be able to see that at a glance. And like I said, they're going to test out a larger format rail map for the whole system. So we gave them some feedback on the spot. There will be from the perspective of low vision people and myself and three other low vision people there, we each have different issues. And we represent the spectrum of people who have vision challenges. It may not be possible to satisfy every rider all of the time, but I think we can help guide them toward a good compromise, a consensus. I think that's a better word. And we did emphasize that we do need the information on the pylons at decision points. And Metro is trying to do like at some decision points, are you going towards exits? At other decision points, are you going towards rail lines? And which direction are those rail lines going? So it gets really, really complicated to figure this all out and make it as succinct as possible. The station ahead maps that they call them maps, I call them lists, but okay, the metro lingo is station ahead maps that are going to be vertical on pylons and pillars in the station, and they're going to try to go back to putting these on the big round concrete pillars when possible, because then they can have a larger format compared to the narrower square pylons or even the very skinny square pylons. They're testing out from that you would read the station you're at is at the bottom of the list, and the end of the station of the rail line that you're going towards will be at the top. They're trying to reinvoke put listing every single station along the way because they've had a lot of complaints when it sort of skips stations and sort of just indicates, oh, there's a few more stations between here and there, but we're not going to list them all. They will center this vertically at about 4 feet off of the floor. I think it's 48 to 60 inches. I can't remember that exactly, but sort of at head height will be the center of this list of stations on the station ahead maps. So that yes, the top of it may be a little bit, you'd have to lean back to look up to see it a little bit, but the bottom won't be quite so close to the floor, hopefully. The ones we saw as examples were probably a good 2.5 feet off of the floor. It's tricky. They're trying to find the best consensus how to do this. So they're looking for feedback on all of this, and I'm just trying to see if there's something. Oh, they also talked about the tactile raised letter signage. So for people who are totally blind and can't read signage, there are tactile signs, raised lettering with Braille below, and they were asking, do any of us read Braille? Well, none of us in the room did, but one person does use the raised lettering signs, which are my experience seeing those. They're generally sort of as you come down an escalator, they're on the first pillars that you would encounter, or on the first wall in front of you that you would encounter, which seems like a logical location. But I think there needs to be some discussion about what is the logical, consistent location so that blind riders can find those signs. And we did have a little tiny bit of a discussion about the bathroom signs. Those will also be tactile in the sense of raised iconography, So the shape of the symbols will be raised so that you can feel it. There was some discussion about hard copy maps inside of rail cars. This is a little off topic, but the location near doors, there's some discussion, and I think we can follow up with that, but that's not the goal at the moment, dealing with the signage in the rail stations. Audio messaging in stations, should be slower was mentioned, just like Steve mentioned again tonight. Partly because, seniors' auditory comprehension tends to slow down, and the echo in the rail stations makes it a little harder to hear them. So, but that's again was a little bit different topic, talking about audio signage, but that's very important for people who are blind, that there's other ways to receive the information. So and a couple other points. So we who were at the meeting can give feedback to WMATA and at any time. And the well, actually, let me, I'll get back to that in a second. So another thing that was discussed was WMATA is thinking about using the canvas, as they call it, or the space on the floor for pathway symbols, possibly even tactile, but symbols and lines and arrows to indicate direction to go for things such as how do you find this such and such exit when you come to the top of an escalator and you have to make a U-turn to get to such and such exit. Would it be useful to have that information on the floor? Because all of us pointed out that as low vision people, when we're walking, we're often looking down to be sure that we're not bumping into things or people or tripping on anything on the floor. There was a little bit of discussion that there's consideration of using NaviLens as a navigation tool within metro stations or on buses and bus routes. So WMATA is in conversation with NaviLens. Okay, but one of the takeaways, so this is to wrap up next steps, so to speak, and then I'll let the other folks chime in if they have things to add that I've forgotten. But the next step is Metro is trying to pull this together to do a total makeover of all of the static signage in L'Enfant Plaza and have it installed by late March, early April. I don't know how serious it is, but the date was picked to coincide with opening day for baseball. And that would be early in April, but whatever, they will get it installed in L'Enfant Plaza, hopefully by mid-April at the latest. And then all riders can observe these signs, and we will be invited back to another sort of focus group in L'Enfant Plaza Station to point out to us what's new, what's where, what's different. But feedback from us and feedback from the public will guide Metro in how to improve signage. What works, what makes sense, what really was off target and is not making sense. Because the ultimate goal is that WMATA wants to pull together, codify the static signage for rail stations. And then take that forward to the board for approval before they roll it out to other stations within the metro system.
Right. Sandy, did you mention the way they determined L'Enfant Plaza was very good? They had initially thought about Foggy Bottom, which is a much less complex station, and they decided that the best approach might be to look at a station that had pretty much every need, including trains running in in obscure directions, if you will, and different exits and entrances. So that's why they picked L'Enfant Plaza with a very ambitious target date.
So, L'Enfant, I actually missed that part of the discussion because I was in the back of the room starting a Zoom meeting that I was running simultaneously. So, L'Enfant Plaza has, there's not that many stations that have, exchange, where you can go from one line to another line on two different levels. But L'Enfant Plaza does, win the prize for having the most rail lines through the station, two upstairs and three downstairs. So it is a very complex station and it has four exits. So if they can get it right there, then I think the codifying it and applying it to other stations should work. But anyway, so I'm going to ask any other thoughts from the folks who attended the meeting and then open it for discussion from listeners here. Oh, and I'm kind of ran over time, but
This is Sarah. I'll just chime in real quickly on the complexity issue. I believe L'Enfant also has the benefit of having multiple elevators, which makes it very complicated for the people that needed to use those. I'll say in general, I want to thank Maggie. I thought it was a very good meeting. And I think we've talked about a lot of these topics before at some point, but sort of piecemeal. And it was nice to be able to have a focused time. And a longer period of time, because usually we have, 20 minutes, half an hour with somebody, and they're trying to, rapidly write down comments. So I thought it was a good way to get a lot of information back and forth.
Yeah, Sarah, did you notice also they came prepared to truly want to solicit information. They were great listeners. You recall, right in the middle of the must have been about 2 hours, we broke in order that we could give them, as we were walking around at the demonstration, more detailed feedback. So I was very impressed by their attitude and their focus and the multiple number of people who actually showed up, with their team to speak with us.
Yes, and it also helped that we had the actual signs there to look at and not just pictures of signs. So the one thing that I think Tino had mentioned very briefly that I would love for maybe Maggie to follow up on at some later date is to learn a little bit more about what WMATA is thinking in terms of Navalens. I did a little homework when I came back to the house and found a few other systems that already use it, including MTA, who apparently actually recently did a survey on of their people on how it's working or something. And so it would be great to learn more about what WMATA is thinking, but also if there's a way to find out how it's working for other systems to get some like real life feedback. So not just, the sales pitch from Navalens or that sort of thing, but sort of how it's working with real life experience on the ground. Because it does sound like it could be very useful for certain parts of the system. Waymap being a kind of different system, which would also be useful, but I can see Navalens really being helpful for answering some of our issues, especially with bus stop information and that sort of thing.
MTA being the New York City system, you didn't
Yes.
mention.
So, this is Sandy again. Yes, Maggie, thank you very much for organizing this focus group and thank your Metro staff for coming. It really was a good presentation. Really quickly before, I think Janice Samuel and Jillian Bante, who were participants, folks with low vision who lent good perspectives. Do either of you want to say anything real quickly?
Real quick, Sandy, this is Janice Samuel, if I may. Again, thank you, Maggie, for allowing members of the public to attend. I did have a opportunity to look at the 6-foot transit map, and it didn't appear that the lettering was any larger. It may have been, but the lettering or the colors of the map. It seemed to be bigger, but nothing, the map was larger, but the image didn't seem to be any larger, including the lettering. And a comment I wanted to make on the SAMs, especially for those complex stations, what they do is they take out a subsect to show you where it's going. So if you have like a transfer point, it'll pull out the lines, the rail lines where they're going for one color and another color. So it's like three different subsects, which can be a little confusing, especially if you're in a crowded, busy station and you're looking for which one applies to where you're going. And then, of course, since you have three on one pillar, they're going to be smaller. It's a little, Maggie might be able to describe it better, but how the SAMs are pulled out and depicted on the pillar. Thank you.
And this is Jillian. I can speak a little bit to the map as well. And I spoke to, I believe it was Sam at the meeting, because he was asking me specific questions on what I could or couldn't see on the map. And I explained to him that like a map is just never going to be a as functional of a tool for me as I'm navigating the metro system, and that really the pylons with the list of names is going to be key for me as I navigate the metro system. And the one thing I did point out to him on the larger map system is, it's very congested, and so it's, I just for me, I just can't kind of piece apart the exact train stops versus how they're all running together. And then also pointed out that on the map there wasn't high contrast versus on the pylons with the stops listed out. There's really there's better contrast with the white on black font.
So thanks, Jillian. So this is Sandy. I'm going to circle back and say that it came up over and over again that there are multiple ways within the metro system to get information, and we each pick and choose which works for us. But very commendable that Metro has these options. Yes, the overhead signage that people who can see well can see from a distance. Yes, the pylons and pillars that we folks who need to get up close to see it can get up close to it. And I think my favorite signs of all are the digital next train coming signs that are at eye level, not the ones hanging from the ceiling, but the ones that list which line, which direction is next on this platform. So those didn't come up per se in our meeting, but they are present at L'Enfant Plaza. So,
Well, Sandy, are you ready for questions?
sure. If I know that we need to have, I'm trying to think what time we need to break for public comment, but yes, I'm ready for questions.
Okay, so Dr. Posner is first.
Okay, and Patrick has had his hand up for a long time also, so I'll be brief. But L'Enfant Plaza, the signs need to be complete. And getting from one platform to the street, I mistakenly took the elevator that the sign said, elevator to the street. And when I got off of the elevator to the street, I was on the mezzanine with no elevators anyplace else and a bunch of unmarked escalators. Well, that's no good for someone with a device for mobility. So they need to tell you you're going to the mezzanine and you're trapped. In addition to that, the street elevators let you off in multiple directions, ranging from a courtyard for a federal building with no signs on it to the place you really want to go, which is the bus stop for the shuttle to Waterfront. And so it's nice to be concise, but don't trap people, because there is VRE plus all of the metro lines that stop there on multiple levels, as you pointed out. But those that are going to the street may want to go to a government building or to the waterfront, which are the two most popular spots. The other thing I would point out, often because of elevator outages, people go past the station where they had to go because the elevator that they got off on doesn't work. And so it's very useful for them to know which of the stations that have center platforms. So if they do have to go back, they just walk across the platform. They don't have to go up an escalator or an elevator and then come down an escalator or elevator. So center platforms are important information.
This is Sarah. I mean,
You
just
know, knowing what bus stops are there, I'll also point out that there are three airports. There's DCA, there's IAD, but there's also Thurgood Marshall. And if you're going up to Baltimore on the Orange Line, you can get the MARC train and just step on that and go to the Thurgood Marshall Airport in Baltimore, which has better flight connections, shorter waiting times, and lower fares than IAD or National. So those are my comments. Know all the airports. Be specific at what's at the exit, not just you're in the street, but also you really are in the street. You're not given an opportunity to find it. So, Patrick, please
Sarah,
go
did you want
ahead.
to respond?
Yeah, if I can jump in real
Sure. Of
quick,
course.
you're absolutely right. And we did have a very brief discussion about the complexity of the elevators, especially there. And there was some discussion of a certain kind of signage to be used, but we didn't spend a lot of time on it. And I think you're right. I think it just probably deserves a more focused look at the elevators in general and elevator outages. We also had some discussions about the dynamic signs, about marking which elevators were out and how to get faster information when there are elevator outages. But I think
She
maybe this
want
is
to keep
that's
on
something we need to tackle
somebody
maybe separately because it
what?
really is, it's a whole issue of its own.
So why do
But
you
you're
say
also
you
right about
have to
Thurgood
look at
Marshall.
all of the bad stations like Capital South, the train station,
Yep.
Rosslyn? They are as bad as L'Enfant Plaza, if not
Yep.
worse.
Yeah, you're right. I think we should do that separately because that's going to be a whole monster of it's an octopus of its own.
Thank
Yes.
you. And Phil, you're not trapped. You can get to the get up to the street from the mezzanine level where you came up from below. And anyway, it's a complicated thing, but I'd rather use the term confusing rather than bad. I don't like to use the term bad. Anyway,
Well, I
Patrick.
did get up from to the street. I wound up in a courtyard with high walls around it, no signage, and no exit. So, yes, I was trapped.
May I just add, Sandy, Tino actually was next, but if
I was going to take Patrick since he
okay.
participated in the meeting and
Okay,
Phil.
well, Tino, actually,
Okay.
why don't we go with Tino since he chairs the committee?
I was
Okay.
going to move on to the problems with buses that needs the
Oh.
kind of attention that was given. Pat, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Tina. I'll just make mine brief. A couple of things. One, Dr. Butler, excellent meeting that you have set up. I think WMATA is really thrilled with the amount of information that they're getting from this committee, Bus Rail Committee, particularly on the low vision side. We've never done that before, and I think that's great. Goes back to then the next thing I was going to ask is we're getting a lot of suggestions, and they need to be, dealt with in a certain way. Communication wise, Maggie, would you want suggestions to go to Sandy and then to MetroAct Chair, or how would you want us to communicate you don't want us communicating directly with the sign people because they work for SARA, which is a totally different organization. Do you understand what I'm saying there, right?
Yes. So what we're doing each meeting is collecting your comments, but if you have comments outside of the meeting, if you think of something when you leave the meeting, then please send them to the Metro AAC email listserv so that we can compile those, and then we'll share them with you to make sure we've captured them. Because we do have minutes from last Friday, we're just consolidating those, and so we'll share those with the committee. I think we'll have those, the consolidated lists, by tomorrow close of business to share with you all. So you can send them to Metro AAC, and then we will put those in our database, send them back so everyone has visibility of those comments, and then share them directly with our internal stakeholders that will need to comment and respond to each comment.
Great. And I was amazingly impressed with the timetable. I thought it was going to be a October release for all this new station stuff, and it looks like it's beginning of April, so they're moving really quickly. And then lastly, it's kind of nice some of the crossover. I know we're working on bathrooms, and part of that is signage, and so what we figure out here is going to be a part of the bathroom signage going forward, so I think that's going to be great. Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, Tina.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the kind of attention that was given to signage in the Metro Rail stations, at some point it needs to be given to the bus stops, or at least the bus stops that are in Metro Rail stations.
Absolutely, Tino, and we're trying to sort of take it a little bit sequentially, and partly the prioritization of the metro signage is because metro is moving forward so fast, and they want feedback soon, and then I think the next thing we will tackle is the bus stop, bus flags, and bus stop signage.
Yes, this last 10 seconds, at least Friendship Heights has some electronic signs above some of the buses saying when the next bus is coming. You go to Bethesda, and with all the ride-on buses, and there are many more of that than WMATA buses, there's no such indication of when the next bus is. It's absolutely a desert in terms of signs. I may be wrong because I haven't done a thorough walk around underneath the that is above the Metro Rail escalators, but just from my random observations, I haven't seen any indication of when a particular bus is coming, either a ride-on bus or a WMATA bus. It's terrible. Thank you.
And you're saying inside the station or when you get to the outside and you're in the bus
Well, when you
bays?
up out of the escalator from the trains, you end up under, and ironically, it's called the Metro Center Building. It's really bizarre. It's called the Metro Center Building. But up when you come out of the escalator and you're looking for the bus you want or what time it's coming, you're at a loss.
Okay, a topic to be tackled.
Yes. There's what Sarah's next, I think.
One last comment slash question, also for Maggie. Can you talk a little bit about the feedback surveys? It seems like I got a survey over the weekend asking for feedback on signs, but I don't think anybody else did, or at least I know Sandy said and Jana said that they did not.
I didn't get one.
I didn't send out a survey. I'm not sure who that's from.
Fascinating. How about if I take some, well, actually, I'm not sure I can do it now. I'll send you a screenshot information of It looked like it came from Metro customer service, but it was about some of the same questions about signs.
Okay, definitely was not from our team. We're managing the minutes, and then we'll send out a note to you all tomorrow. I didn't want to overwhelm you all with emails today, but we did not send out a survey.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Hi. Is this public comment yet?
No.
Okay,
It's
I'll
related
wait.
to the topic that we just were discussing.
Okay.
But Tina, this it is time to switch over to public comment so that there's an opportunity.
Sure.
I thought that was on the schedule for 6:45. I may be wrong.
5:45.
Yeah. I
So it
can
looks
wait.
like
I mean, it's about signage, but not this particular signage.
go ahead, Philippa.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just going to say, first of all, thanks to everyone who was involved with working on that process. And hopefully, I can get involved next time around when it's not icy outside. The other thing is the New Carrollton station. I've had a couple of friends tell me that in trying, I guess it would be trying to pick up people at the Kiss and Ride, that they can't find it now because of the construction, and there's a clip that tells them do not enter where the buses and the taxis can go, but there is no way, no signage telling them where to go for the Kiss and Ride. And one friend was trying to pick up someone with asthma and diabetes, and that person couldn't, walk a long way to try to get to where she was, so she ended up basically going into the do not enter,
Oh my.
because that's the only opening she could find. I mean, it was just a do not enter unless you're a bus or a cab. It wasn't like she was going into head-on traffic. So anyway, that was something I told them I would bring up, that there seems to be no clear signage. I think it's because of the Purple Line construction, but something needs to be done to help people get to the Kiss and Ride who may be doing it, not every day and don't know where to go.
Sure.
That's it.
Okay. By the way, I keep seeing at the bottom of my screen, Mariam. Mariam, you sent us out some emails. You're part of staff. I don't know how many people have met Mariam. Mariam, could you come on the screen and introduce yourself, Mariam?
Yes, Tino. Can you guys see me? I'm Mary. I'm great. I'm the senior admin for the system-wide accessibility.
Yeah.
I've been just working in the background. I'm Anu's backup. So since Anu is out, I'm kind of stepping in more to help with the team.
Good. Good to meet you. Thank you.
Good to meet you too.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you for your help.
Yeah. Thank you,
You're
Mary.
welcome. Thank you.
Maggie.
So we have Janice Samuels, and then we have Amanda Hillman.
Thank you. I just wanted to reiterate what Philippa said. I brought this up before about the signage at the New Carrollton Metro, whether you're on the upper deck or the lower deck, the Garden City side or the 450 side, the signage is poor with all the construction. There's no kiss and ride. Metro personnel are encouraging you to go into the garage to wait for people to come and pick you up, but drivers wouldn't even know to go in there to look for you. So the signage is extremely poor, and that really needs to be attended to. I know it's because of construction, but it still needs to be addressed. Thank you.
There's a public comment, I think, Amanda.
Amanda Hillman.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you. African American senior citizen. I am, I guess, listening to the presentation from the meeting on Friday. I wish I could have been there, but nevertheless, maybe next time. What I wanted to ask clarification on, I know you all were saying, Sandy was saying something about I guess I know about the different exits having a different letter, like A, B, C, D, etc. But then she was also saying something about the, I guess, designating the different lines, like B for blue or and something like that. So I was trying to get clarification on what she was saying about that in terms of the different lines. And I was wondering, would that be confusing, if I understood it correctly, would that be confusing between designating exit B for line B for blue? I was just trying to make sure I understood what that was about.
If we don't, this is Sandy. If we don't have too many, Maggie, are there other hands up for public comment or do I have time to reply?
It is just Mrs. Hillman's hand at this time.
Okay. Amanda, the exit signs, exit A, exit B, exit C, currently are on very large yellow rectangles and the lettering is black and it always says exit A, exit B, right at the exit. On the wall signs or the wayfinding signs within the metro station, the current example is on a pylon or pillar, a smaller yellow rectangle with black letters, exit A, exit B. The symbols for the rail lines are a circle. That is the color of the line. So it would be a green or a yellow or blue or red or silver or orange circle with a single letter on it that just says, you know, a B. I think it's a white B on a blue circle, a black S on a silver circle. I can't remember which ones are black and which ones are white letters. But it's a round circle. So you have the shape clue as well for the and circles are used to designate stuff inside of the station, whereas squares and rectangles are used to designate things outside of the station, going out of the station and outside of the station. So the exit, yellow rectangle with black lettering on it that very clearly says the word exit and the letter A, B, C, or D. Excuse me. And then beside that, not on the rectangle, they often, but I don't know if it always has, most of the time, maybe all the time, it'll say 9th and D streets or, you know, 6th and C Street. It'll give you the street intersection, and then often it will have to the wharf or toward the wharf or Metro Headquarters building or the zoo or some, you know, points of interest beside on if it's on a pillar with the yellow rectangle saying exit such and such, it will have the where the exit will take you to. That seems to be the plan. So I don't think you'll have any confusion once you see this a few times.
Okay. No problem. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding what you were saying, and I'm glad that it still has the color along with whatever braille line to kind of help
Yes.
you make the distinction. So thank
Yes.
you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Amanda has her hand up. No, she's taking.
Get ready to take it down. Okay.
Well, we're near the end of the meeting, and really, I think we all owe a debt of gratitude to Sandy and Sarah and Steve and who else were there for that investigation of the signage in the station. Tremendous job, and it's probably not finished. On the other hand, I look forward to when the same attention is given to the bus stops at especially those in metro stations where they have multiple bays for buses. I do want to thank again Tom and Celso for their work. Keep in mind that Tom said that maybe by April, they'll be ready with the next version. based on some additional information and technical assistance from NYU. He said April, which could mean May or June, but that's a real marking point for wheelchair users, because they haven't been able to take advantage of any of this kind of forward information sharing that Tom and Salswa have been working on. Maggie, I turn it over to you.
All right. I just want to say thank you all, subcommittee members, chair, Metro staff, guests, interpreters, and members of the public for your participation this evening. If you have questions, comments, and concerns, please send those to metroaacchair@wmata.com or by phone at 202-962-1100.
One last thing. There was a mention of surveys. There was an encouragement by WMATA to chime in on the upcoming budget. Am I correct, Maggie, that they're asking for comments on the coming budget, FY27, I guess it is?
Let me double check that, Chair Calabria. I can send you an update in the morning.
Yes, they are. They had some hearings last week, and they're soliciting responses to a questionnaire as well as open-ended responses. They have not done the same good job, I think, this year that they have in the past of publicizing, this. But nevertheless, on the WMATA website is the information, Tina.
Yes.
This is Sarah. Can I get in one last alibi under public comments?
Yes.
I forgot to mention from the public, I wanted to send both a thank you and then also just make a note of a wheelchair user who was using a bus in the last couple of days got dropped off at a station, at a bus stop, only to realize that they were trapped. Like this, the stop itself had been cleared, but then there was no way around it to get to any place else. So the bus driver stayed there, relowered the thing, reboarded the passenger, drove up a few more feet to a driveway, and then let the passenger disembark in a place where they could actually get out. So one, there are still issues with the ice and snow, but then two, I think the bus drivers have been, at least in this case, were being extra great in helping people out and trying to get around that.
I think more of us should take up Steve's example of complimenting bus drivers. I started doing that too, not necessarily related to the recent snows, but the bus drivers have been terrific. They're really great. So all of you, I mean, we're just not here for these 2-hour meetings three times a month. We're here to support Metro. And with respect to the budget, say something about the budget. It's going to be more important when FY28 comes up, because then we're going to be back to where we were in FY24. But anyway, thank you very much. It's 6 o'clock, and this meeting is adjourned, even though I didn't take a vote on it. It's already 6 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Calabria.
Thank you, Tina.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Boy, great meeting.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. See you, Tina. See you, Sandy. See you, everybody.
Bye-bye. Stay.